The Athletic.
I'm sorry, you can sit there and look and play with all your silly machines as much as you like.
Is Gascoigne going to have a crack? He is, you know. Oh, I say! Brilliant!
He's round the goalkeeper, he's done it! Absolutely incredible!
He launched himself 6 feet into the crowd and kung fu kicked a supporter who was without a shadow of a doubt giving him lip.
Does it tame and tame and tame again?
Crank up the music, charge a glass. This nation is going to dance all night.
Unwall-charted territory, the unique crowd sounds of a penalty scored on the rebound, glorious second mention scenes from the Copa America, Jack Grealish and the ultimate indignity, Luke Shaw territory, fucking beans on toast people, Big Sam's big introduction, the state of the ITV hub, Stuart Pearce in the New Forest, and the best way to use up 0.00009% of the time since England won the World Cup in 1966. Brought to your ears by The Athletic, this is Football Clichés. Right now, you can subscribe to The Athletic for a special price of £1 a month for 6 months. You'll enjoy great analysis and in-depth features from the very best football writers around, as well as ad-free versions of all of our podcasts. So go to theathletic.com/clichéspod to take advantage of this special discount. That's theathletic.com/clichéspod. Hello everyone and welcome to episode 81 of the Football Clichés podcast. I'm Adam Hurry and with me, my two members of staff. First of all, Charlie Eccleshare. We're into unwall-charted territory.
Very good, yeah.
Yeah.
We're recording late, so has that taken all day? Is that why we're recording so late?
There's got to be something in this.
That intro was originally planned for wall chart ace Dave Walker. Unfortunately, he went...
Beleaguered wall chart ace, I think, isn't it?
Yes. Yes, out of favour.
Under fire.
Out of favour and under fire and much maligned Football Clichés ex-podcast ace, Dave Walker, who had such a good time last night that we're not recording until 8:08 p.m. the evening after. But that's fine. That is fine. Hope you enjoyed it, Charlie. Alongside you for this one is James Moore. James, one thing to share with you straight away. I mean, you witnessed it firsthand.
I did, yeah, that's correct.
You lucky so-and-so, but here, the unmistakable noise that is a penalty being scored on the rebound.
Lovely, lovely stuff. What I'd quite like to see actually is kind of fan cam footage from the Denmark end, because you get that, and there's been a video of some Irish lads watching the game who obviously wanted England to lose, and they're loads of them crammed into a small room, so they all kind of jump up when it's saved, and then the one at the back who's filming it can't see that Kane has immediately scored the rebound. It's just hilarious. I'd imagine that kind of thing. Yeah, you know, that's my favourite thing in football, and I think it's one of yours as well, Adam. That you know, the ball hitting the outside of the side netting and people in the wrong part of the ground reacting to it. I mean, that's a good example of that happening, I think, if you've got the right footage.
Well, yeah, completely right. But there are two things I want to talk about on the back of that. First of all, you mentioned this supposedly viral video of the Irish lads responding to the penalty and the subsequent rebound. I'm always quite sceptical about these videos because my brain always thinks, well, why are you filming this? And then I'm looking in the corner of the screen for the little sort of sky symbol that they might have, not the sky symbol, but the sky box kind of, they might have rewound it to do all this just for the purposes of internet banter. Are you convinced it's genuine?
I choose to believe it's genuine, yes.
Okay, no, fair enough. But Charlie, I mean, there is a nuance to that crowd noise. I feel like the rebound wasn't sufficiently dicey enough to really make people go, oh, shit. I mean, it was...
Yeah,
it's about as good a rebound as you could possibly get.
I know. I don't think I had long enough to really process the fact that my brain had sort of processed that he'd missed. He had an open goal, so there wasn't quite the same kind of agony and ecstasy. I didn't quite have that feeling, which maybe you won. And I was thinking as well about that. You know that rule that if you hit the post, you can't then. Why is that? Like, why is that any... why is it being saved?
Oh, God.
any different from hitting the post. It seems quite an odd thing.
For the record, what scenario do you think of first when you think of someone hitting the post and then having them touch next?
Teddy Sheringham. It's got to be Teddy Sheringham. on his Man U debut at White Hart Lane.
Charlie continues his record of answering questions asked to somebody else on the podcast, but that's fine. That was the answer I was looking for.
To be honest, if that had happened in that game last night, I would have completely forgotten that rule existed and celebrated like an idiot.
No, it's probably the rule that even the most seasoned football fan forgets most easily,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah, oh, yeah, absolutely.
I think it feels so arbitrary. We need Peter Walton on this to explain why it's there.
On Peter Walton, Charlie. Like, what do you reckon his gig is with ITV? Like, is he like a lawyer? Is he like paid like a retainer? is he paid per intervention? What? He's never even on screen. What is it?
Paid per incident he has to talk about.
I genuinely want to know what money he's on to do the Euros. I'm not saying he's not doing a good job. I'm not saying it's not a difficult job. And sometimes the calls are quite difficult, like the Sterling penalty at the time felt like it was. But James, I mean, it's just a weird gig to get, and like in a purely employment level.
And also on ITV, they don't ever refer to him outside like the 90 minutes or 120 minutes of the match. on BT, you know, sometimes they'll go to him at half time, and as you say, you get him on screen. Sometimes if it's a Champions League semi-final in extra time in the last minute of the game, you'll get him on screen as well. So it does seem odd that maybe did BT own like sort of intellectual property right to Peter Walton's face or something? Maybe ITV can't show him for whatever reason.
I wonder how much that is worth. Now maybe it's a similar phenomenon to Gary Neville's early tournament punditry, Charlie, when we thought that ITV were getting sort of Neville light. Mm. Maybe they're getting Walton light as well.
So
you can't have my face. You can't have my face. You have to pay a bit more if you want to put me in a booth.
I wonder what pays more, what Walton has or the Dermot Gallagher slot on a Monday morning on Sky Sports News, where he kind of pours over the weekend's decisions.
Is that the plum? I'd say the only more Ref plum watch. Refereeing gig than that would be going to become like the head of refereeing in Mauritius or something like that. I mean, like, do a Clattenburg. I mean, what do they do? What do they do being like the head of referee?
Oh, what you mean, like setting new standards and.
Yeah. It's just being the face of it, isn't it? Doing nothing. Nothing. You have contributed nothing.
That's a good point, actually. I'm amazed someone hasn't got Clats. Where is he still knocking around in the Middle East?
Clats said, I think Bein quoted him as saying that it wasn't a penalty. Clats said it wasn't a pen.
So is he working with Bein?
I know. I think that they just got his observations.
Right. Yeah, that feels so right.
He is very Bein.
Yeah,
contrarian Clats. Yeah. He is very Bein.
Save that for our Bein episode.
We need to do that. That's
going to be so good.
Anyway, let's kick off the adjudication panel formally after that very long intro. Listener Henry Worth wrote in. He wants me to analyse all the referees whistling at Euro 2020. He says, this has been bothering me. Please can you look into the different referee whistle blows throughout the tournament? He's talking about half-time and full-time, the different kind of patterns. He says it's changed over the last decade, James, and the German referees have a very different style. I mean, I'm getting the vibe that Henry Worth expects me to have gone back through every game and recorded the half-time or full-time whistles of every referee.
This would be something that me and Henry Worth would have in common, I have to say.
That doesn't sound...
Are we building up to you having done this?
Yeah. Yeah,
I have not done it.
That doesn't sound an unrealistic expectation at all.
No,
I did
not.
Try. I did try. In the vacuum earlier when we were supposed to be recording this podcast, I did consider going back through all the footage and trying to find the whistles, but some of it was inaudible and some in criminal cases, the BBC YouTube highlights didn't feature the full-time whistle at the end of every game. They just skipped. Rubbish. So sorry, Henry, won't be doing that. Next up, domestic matters. James, I put it to you that the next 8 seconds you're about to hear are the most eight Scott Parkery seconds you can possibly imagine.
Okay, fine. Hit me.
One, very proud to obviously sit in his chair and try and help the football club move forward, really. So
just proud to sit in a chair. Oh, my God. I mean, a day in IKEA with that guy. Jesus Christ.
Why did he need to say? The football club was inevitable. And we know that with Parker now. We know that that was going to happen. And we know that there was going to be some vague reference to the task ahead of him. But sitting in this chair right now.
The iconic Bournemouth chair.
I mean, you definitely hear the phrase, you know, to be sat here now, I'm very proud, fine. But to specify the chair, I mean, does give the chair a real sense of worth.
He also doesn't look very proud or excited. He looks a lot like a man who thought, could I not have got a slightly better job than this?
Yeah. I think it looks very sidewaysy kind of move, but I'm sure there's a lot of politics behind it. But the fallout from this clip, it made me suddenly realise, Charlie, that domestic football has never felt so distant as it does right now.
It's mad, isn't it? It's like how in midwinter, the idea that it will be warm and sunny again in a few months feels like genuinely impossible to comprehend. And like right now, the idea of caring about Burnley against, I don't know, Wolves just feels impossible. And yet,
this is like
Brett
have started selling their Christmas sandwiches, haven't they, for a laugh for some reason. I noticed that today. It's like that, isn't it? It's the same.
But James, it's not just about thinking about domestic football things. It's about, like, can you imagine, given the kind of tournament rhythm you've been through over the last 3 or 4 weeks, can you imagine, like, the kind of, I don't know, the 4:58 p.m. lull of a Saturday after 50 games have gone whizzing past your eyes on Soccer Saturday? It's not that I haven't got the energy for it. I can't contemplate being in that mood.
But we had this every 2 years, don't we? In reality.
I know
this tournament, for reasons everyone already realises, but we will talk about in a minute, it's very different this time for us as England fans. But we have this every 2 years, don't we? We'd have had it for 3 years. We had this after the World Cup, I'm sure after that Croatia game. I wasn't sat there thinking, actually quite looking forward to pre-season now, actually. We go again, it'll be a new Premier League season, you know, Huddersfield or up or whatever it was. No, I think you kind of click into gear quite quick. You have a couple of weeks off, and then by the time pre-season has kind of kicked off and, you know, there's transfers and stuff, you'll be interested, Anne.
Yeah, and then we'll be raging that there's an international break.
Yeah. It's integral to our employment that people are interested in that, by the way. So let's see.
First international break would be great, though. It'd be like, I don't know, meeting up again for the first time after a massive holiday.
No, it'll be nice. Like when you meet all the lads you meet on a stag do at the wedding, and you're like, actually, maybe not.
exactly like that. Next up, been enjoying lots of tenuous marketing tie-ins for Euro 2020, Charlie. This one sent in via Phil Wanley, maybe the weakest of the lot. He has alerted me to a Facebook post by the Hartlepool Mail, who had a very standard-looking story about the pedestrianisation of Hartlepool Town Centre. And you would never have predicted what's about to happen. But the headline is, Footfalls Coming Home. Footfalls Coming Home.
I actually think that's quite good.
Yeah,
I think fair play to the Hartlepool Mail for, there are far worse examples of that. At least they've had some fun with it.
I kind of feel like that is a potential typo that actually, for SEO purposes, would probably be quite fruitful for them.
Yeah. I really hope that got a lot of clicks. In the Facebook screen grab that he sent me, the post itself has received one laughing emoji, one solitary laughing emoji. which I feel like it deserves more. But
there are 8 comments, it looks like.
Yeah. Obviously, you're really, really thrashing it out in the comments. Charlie, this next one is all for you. It's all for you. Hot semi-final second mention scenes from the Copa America next. This is from the semi-final penalty shootout between Argentina and Colombia. Emi Martinez doing his thing to put off Yerry Mina. And this is how the BBC commentary went.
It's the other centre-half now, Yerry Mina. Saved by Martinez! 2 in a row for the RG stopper!
Love that. So this is brilliant. We got sent this, but I just read the copy and I couldn't see it anywhere because I was like, surely not. Like, the BBC, that feels like a bit much. I know they're trying to be like, you know, down with the kids or whatever. I didn't realise it was on the commentary. Yeah, that's amazing. That's even better to say those words out loud.
Well, I have to say, I mean, James, I mean, the inherent, perhaps, problematic nature.
Well, I was just thinking
RG completely passed by.
It does sound like the kind of thing you'd read in a tabloid newspaper in the mid-80s, isn't it?
Absolutely. I mean, that's by the by for me. I'm not massively fussed. Pulling out RG stopper straight away.
Yeah, I mean, it's instinctive, isn't it? It's like the same.
Yeah. I mean, we could debate long into the night. Would have been afternoon, but because of Dave. But we could debate long into the night about whether stopper refers to a goalkeeper and not a centre-half. I think we may have done it before. But don't let it stop the BBC, that's for sure. RG Stopper, fantastic stuff. So, England, Denmark, the semi-final. Incredibly... It felt tense and it felt like it was built up an appropriate amount. But I have to say, Charlie, I didn't quite get in the mood until Sky Sports News had Ben Stokes on, giving perhaps the most Churchillian speech I've ever heard.
Just finally, as one England captain to another, have you got a message for Harry Kane tonight in the England boys before the big game at Wembley?
Yeah, it's coming home, isn't it?
The most casual delivery of football's coming home, I think I've heard. It feels like... But Charlie, is that perhaps a symbol of it passing properly into the tapestry of English culture? Like, we're not really even signposting anymore. We're just saying it as a thing. It's like a greeting. It'll be in phrase books.
I mean, this as well is kind of fascinating. You're talking about before the imagining Premier League and domestic football right now and how far away that feels. Like, Sky Sports feels like another world somehow. And they're kind of this like weird dilemma they have where obviously they can't just ignore the fact the Euros is going on, but also like it's just not their thing. And
also, sporting crossovers are inherently cringeworthy, aren't they, James? Because you knew that they were going to get the cricket captain on, asking, "Oh, you know, how does it feel? I mean, the pressures. What must the pressure be like? Can you give us an insight of what Harry Kane must be feeling?"
I always find that incredibly strange when you get if I'll try out like Ashes winners and Clive Woodward and whatever. It's all I just don't really understand the crossover there. I don't
man
just,
knows a thing
just,
or
just
two.
Sounds like another English bloke who's done a completely different thing. You may as well get Adam on to talk about the book he wrote, the best book that's ever been written about football cliches, and he's English. So,
all right, so it's quite literally in the top three books that have been written about football cliches. But Charlie, you mentioned a man who knows a thing or two. We are going to get onto that.
Oh,
later.
Great, yeah.
Oh, because that's, my goodness,
he's very much in a man who knows a thing or two territory.
Yeah,
Ben Stokes.
Yeah, that perhaps the centerpiece of this whole episode will be coming up fairly shortly. A question though from one of our listeners, James Moore, writes in. It says, was Wednesday night the biggest game to feature the ultimate indignity? And did Jack Grealish therefore suffer the ultimate indignity? I mean, you tell me.
You're asking me my question.
Yes. Well,
okay. I'd say, yeah, I can't think of it having happened in a bigger game than that, in a European Championship semi-final. Mm. And I know you think there's some sort of mitigation, but how long did he play? Like 38 minutes?
35, I'm told. So,
from what I understand, and when I say that, I mean from what OptiJoe tweeted last night, that's happened to two other England players in tournaments, right? And I think one of them was Aaron Lennon against... Charlie probably just knows this. One of them was Aaron Lennon against Portugal in 2006. And Beckham was injured and Lennon came on then and went off again in extra time.
Mm.
And the other one was Jamie Redknapp against Scotland, who came on at half time very well, and then got injured right at the end of the game.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
So fundamentally, if you take the Lennon...
Both of the two independent defences of it, aren't they? An injury and you had to go off, or you come on early and you play like an hour or more. Whatever.
Yeah, which then annoys me when people talk about that being an indignity. It's like, well, no, it's not. Like, they came
overruled.
On... They played a reasonable amount of time.
Dignity intact.
So, well, I mean, to an extent, Grealish's substitution does tick the boxes, Charlie. I mean, what I would say is that those words instinctively came into my head when I saw him sort of trudge off. But I have to say, you don't actually hear that phrase anymore. I mean, commentators just don't use it because it is basically disproportionate in almost every situation because it's like, it's not an indignity.
It's not that bad.
It's not that bad. And given these days, the whole rhetoric about being subbed off, it's like, well, I want him to be angry. I'd be more worried if he wasn't. And as it turned out, Grealish was really happy after the game, actually.
Yeah, it was great, that, wasn't it? I mean, you knew that would happen.
Southgate's never going to pick him again. Yeah. Never going to pick him again.
Yeah. Absolutely furious at his reaction. Really
lounging
unbothered.
Around on the tarpaulin covering seats. That is not the sign of a man unhappy to be substituted. He's got it all wrong. But no, in summary, to answer your question, James, given the circumstances, the duty of it all, I just don't feel like it qualifies. And I do fear for the future of the ultimate indignity because I feel like the threshold is narrowing. So it feels like an exemption on Wednesday night for Grealish. That's all I would say. Perhaps more open and shut case, Charlie. A set-piece situation during the game from the left-hand side. Luke Shaw looking to swing the ball in for England's various aerial targets. And ITV's Sam Matterface declared it Luke Shaw territory.
I didn't notice that, but yes, that is getting... That's way over the top, isn't it?
It is literally getting carried away, isn't it?
Yeah, we're not there yet.
Irony aside, my main beef with this, James, even if Luke Shaw doesn't deserve his own territory yet, you can't have territory for a cross. Mm. You can't have territory for a cross.
That's a good question.
I'm just trying to think of David Beckham.
Could you have Beckham?
Beckham territory was shooting.
You're talking about shooting territory, Beckham.
Is territory always from a dead ball? Can you have territory in open play? Okay.
Yeah, I mean, in open play, it then becomes areas. you want to get into those areas where he can do the most damage.
Yeah, I'm not sure. Also, you'd have the time for someone to be like lining up a shot and you to be like, this is in Skull's territory. Like, that would sound quite weird. Whereas you have time to like measure out exactly. Right, okay, it's 23.7 yards or whatever.
Yeah, territory is a very precise thing. So therefore, the ball has to be static for you to analyse what's going on. So yeah, it's more areas. Oh, that was more comprehensive a discussion than I expected. good stuff. More niche territory now.
You're getting into those areas, Adam.
Actually, this was interesting psychological point during the game. I had one eye on Twitter during the game, Charlie, and a psychological boost as things were looking a little bit tetchy in the second half, when the first person finally broke ranks and said, Denmark look exhausted. And when you read that, and it's not at the time backed up by your own eyes, you think, oh my God, ah, yeah, this is it. They do look exhausted. It's great.
Yeah.
Incredible morale boost.
Yeah, they did as well. I mean, yeah, that really, it's like you've broken them. And there's very little way back from there, isn't there? It's kind of like the best you can do is cling on for pens. But
when someone who you can't hear has said you're exhausted, then that's it. I mean, yeah, definitely, it's all over. But interestingly, it did get me thinking, James, that in major tournament contexts, we talk about players being exhausted, maybe looking a little bit tired. But you never use the common footballing synonym for tired during a tournament. Do you? Do you know what word I'm talking about?
I feel it's a feeling I've suffered today, but you're going to have to remind me.
The word is jaded.
Yeah.
Yes, then, definitely.
Actually, like,
jaded.
It's like a properly football word, isn't it? Jaded.
I think that's more of an emotional tiredness, isn't it? Rather than a physical tiredness.
I think
I think there is a mental element to it.
It's not quite leggy. Leggy.
Yeah, I think jaded, though, is an element. There is a mental element. It's towards the end of a long, hard season.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
and the pressure's sort of catching up with you. I don't think it's just a physical thing.
Partly psychological.
Also an Aerosmith song, I believe.
Is it?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
Is it about the...
it's about a long, hard Premier League season.
The business end of a Premier League season.
Yeah. It was written very much with the running in mind.
But I mean, when you hear it during a sort of domestic season, sort of on like Sky coverage, and you know, like a pundit will say, well, yeah, they look a bit tired at the moment. I think that's just something you say. I think it's just something you say. I don't think it's something you've analysed. I think it's just, yeah, look a bit tired. It's just an excuse. It's an excuse they've made up to sound like they've analysed the situation. Producer Dave, who is awake, says the definition of jaded is bored or lacking enthusiasm, typically after having had too much of something. So both of you, 27 minutes into this podcast recording, presumably. Not lacking enthusiasm, though, because it's going to get better. It's going to get better. James, you were there, of course. How did the 2 minutes and 41 seconds of England keeping the ball feel?
For a massive pessimist like me, it was absolute torture. The Olays, I mean, I'm not a massive fan of that.
Oh, you're not an Olayer?
No, absolutely not.
It's crazy to Olay. It's like you're trying to piss the opposition off.
Yeah.
Isn't fate tempting again, is it?
It really is.
I know
you don't buy into this, but I don't care about it being disrespectful. Forget that. Who cares?
No. Sure.
I'm just more worried about like the potential for that to come back and hit us in the face.
Completely.
No, but you know,
like, if you're like 3-0 up in the last 30 seconds or the last whatever, 3-0 up, fine, but you're one goal up against a team who are clearly decent. I just think,
I accept the logic of James's pessimism, I accept the logic of Charlie's anxiety, but I put it to you that even the most kind of fair weather football fan gets the vibe of when an Olay is safe. I mean, Olays are so rarely unsafe.
But I think one goal, you shouldn't be Olaying with one goal. I think it's irresponsible.
It only takes a second to score a goal. It only takes a second.
But you have to throw in, James, you have to throw into this mix that when have England fans ever truly got the chance to properly Olay, and for so long? Like, we're so rarely afforded that opportunity to Olay in a competitive game as well. And we would do it in a friendly against Armenia or something.
That would be fine, by the way. I'd be fine with that. Is it possible that was like the longest spell of possession England have ever had in a competitive game? Well, certainly like in a tournament game.
Mark Carey was saying today, I mean, I forget the exact stat, but it was one. I think it was the longest passage of play any team's had at the Euros, or it was certainly.
Oh, that's enough. That's
right.
Enough,
oh, that's good.
Yeah.
But also, it was so Sunday League, this, because it then turned out they had 10 men.
It always is with you, isn't it?
But like, they suddenly they were like, oh, actually, Denmark only had 10 men for that passage, feeling I get on a Sunday when you're like, we're absolutely bossing at the first 20, and then someone's like, you know, they've only got 10 men. You're like, Oh, that's why I had loads of space.
History will
really
never
good.
Care. History's never going to care about the 10 men.
This will be an illustration of how good an evening I had. That at halftime and extra time, me and the guys I was with had a conversation about Denmark having made all their substitutions and the guy going off. But when someone mentioned this morning that that they were down to 10 men for the second half extra time, I was like, what? Really? Just had no memory of that at all.
It's one of the first things that gets airbrushed. I mean, because they'd never a man sent off. It was, you know, done in a, you know,
they were so exhausted,
way.
We'd worn them down, and we earned the right to pass it around for 2 minutes.
Maybe if someone had tapped me on the shoulder and said, you do realise they've only got 10 men, I would have actually been fine with the LAs and joined in.
It's fine. It's not going to ruin your evening. I mean, it's a very long time, 2 minutes and 41 seconds. It's 72.1% of the duration of Three Lions, Charlie. If you watch the video when England had got possession, I think it's Phil Foden will kick it out of play just as Gary Lineker scores his goal against Germany in 1990. Completely unrelated events and doesn't tie together at all, but I did look it up, so I wanted to tell you. James, meanwhile, 2 minutes and 41 seconds is 0.00009%. of the time since England won the World Cup in 1966.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Charlie, England's dramatic win, I feel in a narrative sense, spared us the debate about whether a goalkeeper, in this case Kasper Schmeichel, can be both that man and have a happy hunting ground. He was very close to achieving a rare double.
Yeah, that would have been huge. What an accolade for him. I mean, he's won the Premier League, he's won the FA Cup, but to be that man and have a happy hunting ground.
Well, let's break it down. How close was he to being that man? Could he have done it?
Yeah, I don't know.
Is he eligible?
He's there again. That man for a keeper. I don't know.
Is there an argument for it on the basis that he was probably the most famous player in the team, or at least to an English audience?
Exactly, because it's lots of good saves. I mean, he made two very, very good saves to thwart England. And also, he had the pre-match kind of faux controversy as well. So that kind of had him forefront of people's minds. So I think he may well have qualified.
I think you could have a that man again. And it's that, and England are denied by that man again. I can picture that.
Nice qualifier.
Patrick Schick that man as well, earlier in the tournament, by the way. He was possibly the that man of the tournament.
And we've forgotten about him. Like, I mean, yeah. He's still in the running for Golden Boot,
he's,
I believe. So
joint the, top, I believe.
Potentially could never be that man again. But as for happy hunting ground, that's not a goalkeeper thing, is it? I mean he does love playing at Wembley, Kasper Schick.
I've seen him concede five goals there in a Premier League game against Spurs. Sorry to Spurs you up again. I'm not having that.
No, that's fine. It was more of a recency bias thing. But, you know, happy hunting grounds.
What about, to keep this Spursy, Tim Krul, although it's a different ground, but away at Tottenham, given he had that like record-breaking save day for Newcastle when they won 1-0, and then he was the hero in the penalty shootout against Norwich the season before last. I think Spurs away is a happy hunting ground for Tim Krul.
Yeah, it's just the word hunting. It implies that you're actually gaining something, whereas he's repelling things.
Yeah, he's sort of, I feel like he's a bit of a huntsman, Tim Krul.
Hunter-gatherer. Goes and gathers.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, interesting. Happy gathering ground for Tim Krul. The Europe-wide reaction to England's win, Charlie, which you've written about for The Athletic, had some curious moments. I mean, there was the inevitable petition story. and these things always unfold after one single tweet.
Yeah.
Very flimsy situation. But there was a petition to get England disqualified. Hollywood acting ace Mads Mikkelsen. I believe this was an Instagram story with the caption, "Football team lost to the fucking beans on toast people."
Quite like that.
I really want to object to that. And I've actually even Googled the origin of beans on toast just to check. But it all seems to check out, so fair enough.
I wonder if it was like a Paul Merson reference.
Yeah, I was thinking that, yeah. I know, it's a shame they didn't hit the beans yesterday.
Yeah, I'm devastated that the words beans on toast evoke Paul Merson in my head rather than actually beans on toast. But quite a novel way of referring to the English people. Mm. Charlie, anything else? Any other sort of inevitable ripples of saltiness in Europe?
Yeah, I mean, I found this slightly surprising. It's the thing I wrote about. Like, I don't remember us being, like, I don't know, it feels quite nice that people care enough about us to be you know, throwing this sort of shade in the way that we would normally be asking for matches to be replayed or for players to be retrospectively given 12 game bans for diving or something. It was kind of, I think, inject it into my veins, as the kids say on Twitter.
Yeah, James, I mean, it introduces or at least emphasises another potential angle of this communal experience, because, I mean, we know that club football is based around basically taking the piss out of, you know, your friends' clubs or any other people that you come up against. Whereas the England experience, as we've established so far, is very much a communal thing. We're all in it together and we're all enjoying it together, which is fun. It's very enjoyable. But if you throw in an aspect that other people hate you as well, then you basically get the best of both worlds, don't you? You get the fact that you know you're annoying someone, or supposedly annoying someone, but you're all doing it all doing it together. That's actually potentially the best possible scenario. Yeah, we'll just be England fans forever.
In England's case, we have the like unique situation of having like other countries kind of incredibly close that we're kind of in this union with, and others, yes, who we're not in this union with. I don't want to get into all that stuff, but basically we know exactly what they're saying at any given moment, and we know they're annoyed.
But actually on that point, the Welsh, Scottish and Irish reaction, Charlie, what level of irony should we be operating on now? It's a little bit similar to the it's coming home irony debate, which is, how should we be dealing with our friends in the provinces? I mean, it doesn't get my back up that they want England to fail.
I am happy.
They should want us.
Yes, I'm happy and I expect them to do it. But where do we go from there? I mean, you can't have this standoff. You can't have a standoff where they hate England, you know, almost performatively, and we say we're all right with it. That's not even a Cold War.
We should be reacting and actually getting pissed off about it.
I think we have to. Like, something has to give. We can't just stay with that. It's never going to progress.
But it's quite good, because it's sort of it's more inflaming of the situation for us to be like, nah, we don't care. It's like we're the sort of bigger brother or whatever. It's not.
Yeah, I mean, it's always going to end up being this kind of, you care more than me situation, isn't it, Jane?
Yeah, I mean, what I would say the counterpoint to that is, in 2016, when Wales went further than England in the Euros, obviously we couldn't really get away with that. And I was incredibly salty about that. So, I remember being in a pub watching the Wales-Belgium game and being one of two people who didn't want Wales to win, and being really annoyed that people wanted Wales to win. It's just not the way it should work. We should want them to lose and they should want us to lose, and that's absolutely fine.
Yeah, that's fine. Yeah, we're all at peace. I mean, yeah, everyone's having their fun with it. I mean, I don't think anyone is genuinely cut up about any of this. Possibly they are. The next bit I want to share with you, an unlikely centrepiece for this episode, but here it is nonetheless. I haven't actually picked on GB News yet, Charlie. I mean, it is very low-hanging fruit, as has already been established, but I couldn't not pass up this opportunity. Big Sam Allardyce, was on GB News on Wednesday night reacting to the England game. And normally, as you alluded to earlier, a man like Sam Allardyce would normally be introduced on a programme like this as, here's a man who knows a thing or two, etc, etc, etc. Quick little intro, and let him offer his platitudes. But no. Here is the full 1 minute, 48 second introduction of Big Sam on GB News by the preposterous Dan Wootton.
Oh, God.
Can I have brought in a guest who knows plenty about the highs and lows of
could have just done it there.
Game?
Yeah.
After a playing career spanning 21 years and 578 appearances, Sam Allardyce went on to become one of the most respected managers in English football, and is the last person to coach the national side prior to Gareth Southgate. Since taking the helm at Blackpool in 1994, Sam's biggest accomplishments have included leading Bolton Wanderers to their first UEFA Cup qualification in 2005 and getting West Ham promoted to the Premier League in 2012, which he described as his best ever achievement. In 2016, Sam signed a two-year contract to become England manager, thereby cementing his place in sporting history. Leading England to victory in the World Cup qualifier against Slovakia was another life highlight for Sam. But 67 days after landing his top job, his dream came crashing down. Sam was caught up in a Daily Telegraph sting offering advice about how to get around FIFA and FA rules for a fee. That resulted in his mutual departure from the England team and the drafting of Southgate as stand-in manager, a temp role that has continued to this day. Reflecting on the scandal in 2017, Sam described missing out on the chance to lead England at Wembley, the battleground for tonight's semi-final, as a gut-wrencher. He said, I wasn't just proud to be the England manager. I was ready. I felt comfortable
with
being
him.
There. Though he admitted he had been
quoting him to him.
Sam was cleared of any wrongdoing.
Like this is your
and
life
went on
thing.
To manage Crystal Palace, Everton, and West Bromwich Albion, which he stepped down from at the end of the season in May. Sam Allardyce, you are the perfect man to be here tonight. Your reaction to the fact that England is through to the England's to the Euros final.
An absolute shambles from start to finish, Charlie.
I don't get that. Just don't go through his whole career. And he looked so uncomfortable at first, to the point where, as you say, they had to cut away from him, which is actually really annoying, because I would have liked to see what he was doing as they talked about the newspaper.
Somewhere on the cutting room floor of GB News HQ, there is Sam Allardyce's reaction to when his intro suddenly went into the controversy section of his Wikipedia page.
I mean, having seen some of the kind of production faux pas they've made on that channel already, I wouldn't be entirely surprised if that was an accident.
Yeah, there was a moment where you just got the vibe that Wootton had lost all enthusiasm with what he was reading from the autocue in front of him. You just thought, maybe this was too long. So someone's definitely getting sacked for that. I really wanted to introduce you both like that onto the podcast. I just don't think we had enough time.
It's awkward, isn't it? out of the three of us, only one of us has a Wikipedia page, don't they?
I didn't want to point that out.
Fuck off.
Can listeners please make Wikipedia pages for me and Charlie?
Mine's going to get edited now, isn't it? This is Valoraki all over again. Charlie, I waited all day for this because no big England night on a terrestrial channel.
I thought, I as soon as this was happening, I was like, Adam is going to love this.
Is complete without confirmation of the viewing figures. And they do have to be confirmed because you get provisional ones, which aren't as good, and then you get the confirmed ones.
Are those like the exit polls after an election?
Yeah. And then they're not definitive until the presenter of the broadcast tweets them out himself, like a boast, as if we weren't going to watch it anyway. But yeah, Mark Pugach confirmed TV figures just in for England versus Denmark last night. A peak of 26.3 million, and including hub non-TV devices, this peak increases to 27.6 million. Yes, we'll get onto the hub in a moment. Making it the biggest peak football audience ever for a single channel. Charlie, that puts it in the rarefied air of the top 10 UK TV audiences of all time.
There are a couple of things as well with this that normally follow, and if it's a kind of Gary Lineker arch sort of additional thing, something like people don't care about international football, or, you know, the more earnest or genuine, like there's just not, you know, nothing quite like live sport, or a joke about Love Island maybe. I think people not caring about internationals and football, whatever, is kind of a staple of those viewing figures, which to me feel fairly meaningless.
No, I mean, it's part of the tapestry, but James, I did like him sneaking in a reference to the widely acclaimed ITV hub there. It's a fucking shambles. It's so shit. Why is it so shit?
You have to log in to use it. Anything you have to log in to use it, like that. I mean, aside from The Athletic, of course. Just not for me.
I mean, these lists of top 10 UK TV audiences of all time inevitably are peppered with high profile English football games and episodes of EastEnders, Charlie, which reminded me that I had to go onto iPlayer, the superior terrestrial digital TV platform, and see if EastEnders are actually mentioning the Euros in any way. I don't watch it routinely, so I haven't really noticed. The Vic does have flags up, Euro related flags up, and not in a kind of, and actually inaccurately, it actually has the right flags for the tournament and isn't just used from Euro recycled. Yeah, exactly. No mention of the Euros.
And really, you're watching the game later.
Exactly.
Well, sometimes they put those bits in, don't they, at the last minute?
Yeah.
But very vague.
They're so rubbish.
The game's on ITV, so why would they do that?
Oh, yeah, they can't mention it. They can't mention it.
Phil Mitchell's not an idiot, mate. Come on.
I mean, we have to. By law, it is mandatory that we now look ahead, Charlie. Looking ahead to the final. We look ahead. All eyes on the final. It's fucking weird, isn't it? That we have this opportunity to do this.
Yeah.
I don't know what to do. I don't know what we're supposed to do. But I do suspect we're going to have the mother of all previews / build-ups.
Yeah, it's just massive imposter syndrome. It feels like we shouldn't be, you know, we should almost offer our place up to France or someone and be like, no, you take it. Like, we shouldn't, we'll only fuck it up, you have it. Yeah, it's all very, very confusing. I mean, when do they start the build-up? Have they confirmed that?
Good question.
I mean, ITV went for a 90-minuter for England-Denmark. I suspect both will go for 2 hours. James, do you think that's probably conservative?
I think maybe more. Yeah. I think it could be like a five-start.
Six feels like a good time to start that kind of programme, doesn't it? Like, into the evening. I think that kind of feels like a logical sort of cut-off point from their perspective. I guess the BBC... Well, they both actually have the opportunity to do stuff on other channels, right? You're talking about their main broadcast on their main channel.
Yeah, no, build-up is such a grey area. I mean, you don't want the one show channel getting involved, do you? Like I said, the one show getting in the mood. Fuck off. That's not part of the build-up.
I mean, BBC have a 24-hour news channel, but they could technically claim to have started their build-up now, really,
couldn't
they?
No, it doesn't count. Doesn't count. It has to be part of the regular scheduling. You had to be taking the place of something else that would routinely have been on at that time. That is build-up. Okay, so, but yeah, speaking of, you know, the timeline between now and the final, we're going to ramp up the previewing left, right and centre. There's going to be a lot. It's going to be laid on very thick, Charlie, isn't it? But I suspect we've laid it on too thick, too early. This is Stuart Pearce and his TalkSport monologue. I feel like you already know what you're about to hear.
My management ship.
But here he is, simply listing lots of English things.
So what does England mean to me? It's Cornwall. The Lake District. The New Forest.
New Forest?
Stonehenge. Buckingham Palace. It's a Cornish pasty. Fish and chips.
Pan pizza.
Clotted cream and scones.
Pie and mash.
It's the Who. The Stranglers. Oasis.
The Stranglers, really? Would you put them in that bracket of like the most English thing?
I think he just really likes them.
The Sonnets of Shakespeare. Her Majesty. The Queen.
The Queen.
It's a Bristolian. A Brummie. A Scouser. A Geordie. A Cockney. And a good old-fashioned cup of tea. More than anything, it's home. This country. This England. My England.
No sign of beans on toast.
No, that's true. I don't know how English... I mean, no judgment here, Charlie. I feel sufficiently proud to be English. I've got enough English pride in me, just the right amount. But that's made me feel slightly bored to be English, quite frankly.
Well, it was a bit too just factual.
It's reminded me of all the English things, and I've just gone, I don't want to do any of those things right now. I don't want to go to Stonehenge. The New Forest, I'd be up for that at some point. And yes, I'll probably have some tea.
Especially
Majesty, the Queen.
The Queen.
As is the case with most of these things, James, the content producer themselves tells you that you must have goosebumps. I don't... Stop telling me.
Yeah.
Stop telling me how I should feel about this stuff. I mean, you know, we're going to have a few days of this, and there's going to be a lot of genuine, sincere sentiment.
I mean, dare you to watch this and not get goosebumps.
Shit like that. It's fucking annoying. Like, there was so much that came out of the game, and people filming stuff from the game that was so sincere, like, properly, this got me, and that's fine, and you're allowed to react to it how you like. But just stop telling us how to react to stuff.
Yeah. It is weird that you seem to, like, there seems to be, like, an insistence that we all have, like, a uniform reaction to everything that happens. You're going to find different elements of it, bring out different emotions in you, dependent on your, like, life experiences and whatever, right?
Yeah.
If you don't cry at this Stuart Pearce video, you're dead inside.
You know, people like me who don't have kids, there'll be loads of stuff that kids do in these things that I just won't give a fuck about. I don't care what kids do, they're boring. Whatever. I mean, but for you two, it might be different, but I don't care.
No, I broadly agree. I mean, my goosebumps threshold, medically, requires more than Stuart Pearce talking about the New Forest.
Brummies.
I bet he's never even been.
He took Gareth Southgate once. And another inevitable development that's already gone super early, James. Yuri Geller has stuck his oar in. He's passing responsibility onto us. He wants us all to shout the word abracadabra, which apparently turns out is a Kabbalistic word. Hebrew etymology suggests that abracadabra is a corruption of the Hebrew ebracadabri, meaning I will create as I speak, that the act of speech itself will magically create new realities. Anyway, Geller says...
It's not quite as catchy, that, is it?
Geller continues.
Sorry, that was slightly Wootonesque. In 2016, Yuri Geller, Geller tells us, say abracadabra three times before the match, okay, after God Save the Queen has been sung, and then at key moments.
Just constantly through the game.
Key moments.
Defined. We'd opt to define key moments, or what? I mean,
Free kicks, corners, but only the second one in succession.
Only free kicks in Luke Shaw territory.
Yeah. all counterattacks where your players outnumber theirs.
Is he... Where's Yuri Geller? What's his sort of medium for saying this stuff now? I mean, do people... Do tabloid newspapers still using his own channels?
This was the Jewish Telegraph's second Yuri Geller exclusive in a row.
Right.
Okay. I feel like they might have a way into him. Great scoop.
If you're the only person talking to him, does it count as an exclusive?
I don't care. just amazes me continuously how he clings onto any of this. But yeah, cheers, Yuri. I'll be sticking. It's like a drinking game. It's like the Yuri Geller drinking game.
Would you have done it twice on that Kane penalty? Would you have had to have said it when he took the penalty and then once it had been saved?
Or yeah, because that's a big chance.
Is that not one continuous big moment? Would you have to say it?
I guess he would have scored if we'd all said it.
True. A couple other points of note. Dan Mahoney, Charlie says, I've seen the final referred to as a small matter. Surely this is the final straw of things that are too big to be referred to as a small matter, even winkingly. Don't think so.
I'd love to know who said that. I mean, because also, yeah... First, the small matter of Italy. You normally have the first, don't you? But there's not anything after this. Yeah.
There's an outside chance of Lineker doing it.
Feels very Lineker.
Yeah, yeah.
Or maybe it's more Pugac.
Just feel like there's something that would have to be coming after it. That you'd say something to it could, you know, something as bland. You know, tomorrow BBC reverts to its normal schedule. We'll have EastEnders, but first the small matter of the Euro 2020 final.
James Stephen Hill asks: any odds of the BBC Philharmonic being queued up for a very special rendition of Sweet Caroline at Sports Personality of the Year?
Yeah, I think that's such a good shout.
Absolutely nailed on to when the England football team win Team of the Year. There's absolutely no chance that does not happen.
Are you going to watch it? Would you now watch it? If we win the Euros, would you watch Sports Personality of the Year? I'm offering you another deal. we win the Euros, but you have to watch the entirety of Sports Personality of the Year.
Oh, God. How long does it go on?
It's good for 3 hours, I think.
And it always overruns.
Is it going to be loads of motorsport and stuff?
Of course.
Whatever they've got the rights to. And
we're here in Sheffield.
Yeah, you don't just have to watch all the coverage. That includes all the sweeping shots of the audience where, you know, in Shearer and Beckham style, you've got two people sitting next to each other which look really awkward. One's really famous, but one's really good in a really niche sport, and you think, oh, they shouldn't sit next to each other. And you have to watch those bits as well. Deal or no deal?
Yeah, it's not worth it. Sorry.
No. Fair enough. Charlie, BBC or ITV for the final?
It's going to be BBC, but and I know maybe on merit it should be ITV, but BBC, I don't know. It's just I can't not watch BBC for a big final. It's got to be Gary in there. Yeah, and the team,
and as we saw on semi-final night, you know, going to an advert break when you're trying to bask in glory, and all those little in-betweeny advert bits, which are actually really annoying.
Yeah, like, well, look, I said on an earlier episode about how now with that, like, we're a bit more okay with ads because we're always on our phones anyway and whatever. But actually, yesterday did annoy me because I just wanted
they could have stuck with it. They could have overruled it.
Are we talking about the pre-game advert you get just after the teams have come out after the anthems and stuff? You get that one quick advert before.
Do they do that though? Sky do that?
I don't think they do that
because that's crazy when Sky fit in an ad, like one ad. You're like, how are you doing that now? It feels like...
Yeah, always for Sky Bet as well, weird that.
Just after a bit like how we fit the Manscaped advert halfway through.
yeah, it's exactly the same as that, that's true.
Friday morning, we've got a couple more days of build-up to go. But it's fair to say we've got off to a flyer. We've all done our bit, Stuart Pearce included. Thanks to you, Charlie. Have a lovely weekend.
Thank you, and you.
Cheers, James. Are you up to anything?
On Sunday.
Small matter?
That's a small matter of a trip to Wembley, Adam.
Ooh, don't mind if you do. Enjoy. Thanks for everyone. A little bit later than planned. The news will follow. Cheerio. See you next time. Bye.
The New Forest.
The Athletic.